You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fresh for your ears, Tell Everybody, the new podcast from the producers of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days, comes The Eclectic. Interviews with difference makers, artists, authors, bold thinkers, people we love who get stuff done. We hope you enjoy. Our guest is Senior Judge, Denver County Court, the Honorable Gary Jackson. We discuss his 50-year legal career, and as he describes it, being the only black person in the room. Next on The Eclectic, the Honorable Judge Gary Jackson. This is Donnie Betts, and this is the podcast, The Eclectic, where we talk to people who, as we say, get things done. And we're honored to have with us the Honorable Gary Jackson. Now, I don't know if the word retired would be the right word for him, because he's still doing so many things. But I know what is important that I want to mention first at the top of this. He's the 2021 National Bar Association Fred Gray Hall of Fame inductee. Okay? That is a big deal in legal circles. And Gary, just explain that award to us for people who don't know. And we're talking to Gary Jackson, who was a judge, an attorney, property owner in Licking Hills, which was used to be an all-black resort. One of the people that made sure that Coors Field is Coors Field, as we know it, in Denver, Colorado, for the baseball team, the Colorado Rockies. Just everything. He's done some of everything. We'll talk about a little bit of that today. This is just our first interview of hopefully a many.
Well, Donnie, thank you much. And I appreciate you asking me the first question regarding the National Bar Association, because in my career, I have received dozens of awards. And for me, being inducted into the National Bar Association Hall of Fame is reaching the top of the mountain in terms of awards. The National Bar Association is a black institution, and it was formed in 1924. And it was formed because of Jim Crow policies and discriminatory policies in the United States that prevented black lawyers and judges from being members of the American Bar Association. So as a result of those types of discriminatory practices, we formed our own national legal organization. And in 1924, when it was formed by 12 lawyers. They actually met in Iowa to form it, but it became an organization nationwide, where today there may be 16,000 black lawyers and judges from across the nation that are members of the organization.
Oh, wow.
And so for me, the Hall of Fame was started in 1986.
Okay.
And it was named after Fred Gray. Fred Gray was the historic lawyer who represented Martin Luther King.
Yes.
During the civil rights days. So when Martin Luther King had a civil rights issue or if there was a situation where he found himself in jail and needed to go to court, it was Fred Gray who represented him. And Fred Gray is alive today.
Yes, he is.
over 90 years of age. He is the first black, president of the Alabama Bar Association. And that occurred probably in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. He was selected to be the first black president of the Alabama Bar Association. And one of the things that he did during his year as president of the Alabama Bar Association, he created a Hall of Fame in Alabama so that black lawyers and judges in Alabama could be recognized for their accomplishments in the legal field. So our National Bar Association, which was formed in 1986 and has about 246 members, there are historic figures like Thurgood Marshall, the Honorable Thurgood Marshall, that's in the Hall of Fame. Of course, Fred Gray, Constance Motley Baker, who was the first black woman federal court judge. Mm-hmm. William Harold Flowers, Sr., who is the father of Sonny Flowers, one of my best friends. He is a lawyer out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and he was one of the early presidents of the National Bar Association back in the late 30s, early 40s. So he's a member of the National Bar Association. So it makes me very proud to be selected as member of that Bar Association in my 51st year of being a lawyer and judge.
Well, I can see why you're so honored, because that's very esteemed company that you're in, that you just mentioned all those great names and all those great attorneys who are part of that. So, and you mentioned Fred Gray being still alive. There's a wonderful conversation that he has. I believe it was in San Francisco that he gave this conversation, this talk. That's online now that people can go and take a listen to. And he talked about the forming of the Hall of Fame and also just the work he had done with MLK. So I would suggest our audience grab that. Just got Google Fred Gray's name, and I think that's one of the first names will come up now. So thank you so much for sharing that information. It's even more in-depth and deeper than I even imagined. So,
I know when he was selected to be the president of the Alabama Bar Association, he did a nationwide tour, and he came to Colorado. And Wiley Daniel, our first black federal court judge here in Colorado, Wiley and I had an opportunity to squire Fred Gray around in 2001 when he was in Colorado. So it's having been a member of the National Bar Association since about 1976, I've had an occasion to meet him on various occasions at National Bar Association conventions, which would be held once a year in various cities.
We're speaking with the Honorable Gary Jackson, who was just talking about his induction into the National Bar Association Fred Gray Hall of Fame, and speaking about Fred Gray in particular. But other things that we want to talk about today with Honorable Gary Jackson is just part of his career. Like I said, this is the first of many, I think, conversation that we'll have with him. He's held many, many esteemed positions throughout the legal system, you know, from being district attorney and working in the Denver District Attorney Office. He has a BA from the University of Colorado and his JD from the University of Colorado School of Law. And let's talk about that, because that's one of the tasks that you have, I don't know, put upon yourself or others to make sure that's more equitable representation at CU Boulder. That's your alum, and you think they're still lagging behind the rest of the country when it comes to representation of black and brown attorneys?
Well, that's correct, Donnie. When I went to CU Boulder, it was 1964. I transferred from the University of Redlands to CU Boulder in 64. I graduated from undergrad in 1967 and entered the law school in the fall of 1967. When I entered the law school, in my class of 150, there were only three black attorneys in that class of 150. Hmm. In the whole school, which would have been about 450 students, there were only four black law students out of 450 in the whole school.
Good Lord.
So I graduated from CU Law School in 1970. So it has been a pledge by me ever since I graduated to do what I could do to expand the opportunities of not only black students, brown students, Asian students to come to CU Law School, but to also for black professors and staff members. The whole time that I was in the law school, there was not any professor of color at the law school. In fact, during the whole time I was at the law school, there was no women professors. Mm. So it has been a goal of mine, as well as the Sam Carey Bar Association, which I was one of the founding members in 1971, to try and make more opportunities available in the legal profession, including law schools, CU and DU, for attorneys of color, professors of color, female professors. So that's been something that I've worked on for now 51 years.
Mm. We appreciate that work, because it is work, and it's a heavy lifting, it seems, when it comes to the University of Colorado. And, of course, other schools around the country, too.
What's exciting, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
Is that this year, CU has hired a woman, a black woman dean, to be the dean of CU Law School.
Fantastic.
So that is an historic step. I know I was involved with the hiring of the first black law professor, which would have been sometime in the late 70s.
Okay.
And now we've reached the point where we now have our first black female dean, Dean Buckner, who will be heading up the law school for the coming years.
It's fantastic. That is progress, you know, slow and steady progress, as they say, but at least progress. So we appreciate you and appreciate the work. Now, you mentioned something a little early in the conversation about an organization called the Sam Carey Bar Association, and you have received an award from them, the King Trimble Lifetime Achievement Award. Luckily, since I am from Colorado, I'm familiar with the organization, familiar with King Trimble and that sort of thing. For our audience who may not be familiar with that and not from the area, from Colorado, can you explain what the Sam Carey Bar Association is and who King Trimble was?
Sure. The Sam Carey Bar Association was founded in 1971 by seven black attorneys. At that time in 1971, there were approximately 15 black attorneys in the whole state.
Oh, my God.
The seven of us that formed the Sam Carey Bar Association, I would describe ourselves as being young Turks. And when I say that, we were all under the age of 30, probably. We were all what I would call socially conscious. We were all had the attitude that we wanted to change the dynamics of the law profession here in Colorado. So the seven members, and I'll begin with our very first president, Billy Lewis. Mm-hmm. Billy Lewis was the very first president of Sam Carey. At the time in 1971, he owned his own law building on 1839 York Street. He had four or five lawyers that worked in his law firm. of which two were white lawyers. So I would have to say that he had one of the first integrated law practices. The another person that was one of the founders would have been Phil Jones. Phil Jones was a law partner of Billy Lewis. Phil Jones graduated from CU Law School 1 year ahead of me. He was the other black law student that was at the law school. He, like I said, was probably under the age of 30 when he became one of the founders of the Sam Carey Bar Association. Billy Lewis has passed away, but Phil Jones is still alive and well. He ended up having a very meaningful legal experiences, because after a few years of private practice with Billy Lewis, he became a lawyer with the U.S. State Department. Okay. And so he traveled the world basically representing the U.S. government as a part of the State Department. The third gentleman that was a member of this, was one of the founders of the Sam Carey Bar Association, was King Trimble, who, Donnie, you just mentioned. King Trimble was in private practice. He had come to Colorado for private practice after serving several years as an assistant U.S. attorney in St. Louis. He has passed away, but during his legal career, not only having a significant private practice, he served on the Denver City Council. And so he was prominent in being a member of the Denver City Council and being one of the individuals that represented the citizens of Denver from Northeast Denver. The next member of the Sam Carey Bar Association was Norm Early. Norm Early and I were exactly the same age, 24 years of age. Norm Early had come to Colorado from Washington, D.C. He'd gone to law school in Illinois. When he came to Colorado in 1970, 1971, he was a legal aid lawyer. And as many of your audience will know, he became our first black Denver district attorney and served as the Denver district attorney for about two different terms. The next member of our next founding member of the Sam Carey would have been the Honorable Raymond Dean Jones. Raymond went to Harvard Law School. Prior to Harvard Law School, he graduated from CC in Colorado Springs. He was a Pueblo native, and was hired by Dale Tooley to be a deputy district attorney. But one of the significant things that he did once he graduated from law school is that he was the law clerk for the Chief Justice of the Colorado Supreme Court. So that was his first job out of law school, was as a law clerk for the Chief Justice of the Colorado Supreme Court. He would have been the very first black law clerk for any Supreme Court justice in Colorado. But his judicial career included being on the Denver County Court bench, the Denver District Court bench, and being appointed by Governor Romer to be the very first black Court of Appeals judge. Raymond is still alive and well. He's now retired. And then the last founding member, which is the seventh person, although I'm describing him as last, he was very, very prominent as a lawyer in Denver. He was hired by Mayor Wellington Webb to be his city attorney. He served with Wellington Webb for at least two terms as the city attorney in Denver. Dan Muse also is alive and well. And so I've just given you, Donnie, the seven founding members of the Sam Carey Bar Association. And as you can see, each of us have distinguished ourselves in a very, very prominent way in the legal circles and the judicial circles here in Colorado.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I would say that you all have, and I would say I've had the honor of interviewing, I think, almost everyone. At one time, I think five of the seven for an award ceremony, but the five of the seven got together. I can't remember what office we were in, but we were down in the City Park or so, in the office down there, and wanted to doing this interview. So I'm glad that I was able to capture that at one time, and so I'll share that with you sometime once we're outside of this.
Well, I remember that interview very well, Donnie.
Yes.
And I believe the copy of that interview may be with the Blair Caldwell Library, but
probably
if it's not, I'd like to see that interview become a part of the archives of the Sam Carey Bar Association at the library.
Well, you know, I can take care of that.
That would be great.
Yeah,
that would
I
be
can
great
take care
because,
of that.
Yeah, Terry Nelson is being very active in terms of trying to pull together information regarding the Sam Carey Bar Association, because we are now celebrating the 50th year of our founding.
Yes.
And the reality is that we are one of the more prominent black chapters of the National Bar Association. One of the reasons that we are one of the more prominent ones is that back in 1986, we formed our own 501c3, and we have been raising money to provide scholarship to black CU and DU law students since 1986. And I'd have to say that we're probably one of the very few chapters across the nation that has their own foundation in which we've raised money.
That is fantastic. Incredible. We're speaking with the Honorable Gary Jackson. As I said, the word retired does not fit him, as you just heard, the work he's been doing with the foundation and with his fellow colleagues who I think you put it very well yourself. You said a lot of times you're the only black person in the room. And what you're trying to do with your foundation and with helping with your colleagues and just the work that you're doing with CU and DU and other entities is that you're trying to make sure that other people are not the only black person, not the only person of color in the room. And for that, we are so honored and proud that you can take care of that and do that. I want to ask you something a little bit different, not really different. It goes along. Could you talk about, you know, as being a judge for many years, you have, and you worked in the criminal cases and so on and so forth. So you spoke about of course, all the different protests that have gone out over the years, but in particular 2020, and the fact that, you know, people like George Floyd and Rashid Brooks and Elijah McClain and so forth should be still alive. And a lot of times when individuals go into a courtroom, all they see is people that don't look like them, but those people hold power and sway over their lives. Can you kind of speak about that, how you want to try to eradicate some of that socioeconomic barriers that and educational opportunities for Black men and women?
Yes, Donnie. One of the reasons that when I left my private law firm after 37 years, that I decided to be a Denver County Court judge rather than a district court judge or an appellate court judge, was that I thought that as a county court judge, I would have a greater reach in terms of people. There would be more people that would have an opportunity to come into my courtroom, have some type of association with me, whether they be jurors, witnesses, plaintiffs, defendants, victims, in law cases. And I thought that by being a county court judge, this is the court which most people have some type of association with. And when I say that, traffic cases, civil cases in which there's a monetary issue of under $25,000, DUIs, careless driving. You know, these are some of the types of cases that come before a Denver County Court judge. And it was my thought that by being a Denver County Court judge, I could serve as a role model for so many people that would let Black people, brown people, poor people know that there are possibilities of being a judge by just seeing me in that position of authority.
Yes.
I know that one of my proudest moments would have been a trial where I had a Black deputy district attorney in front of me, a Black public defender on the other side of the case in front of me, and when witnesses were called, I can remember the case being a driving under the influence of marijuana, where the public defender, a Black female, used as her expert witness a Black doctor from the University of Colorado to come in and come testify. So it's those types of experiences that show the possibilities to others and to be able to show others that we can be equally involved in the legal system. And I can remember what a proud moment it was for me, because if anybody had walked into that courtroom, they would have thought that they were in Atlanta. Or they would have thought that maybe they were in New York.
Right.
But they were in Denver, Colorado, and would be able to see those Black individuals handling a legal matter in which I was the judge. So that gives you an example of what my efforts have been, and one of the reasons why after 37 years of a private practice that I decided to be a county court judge.
Interesting. Yeah. So, well, you thought you could have the greatest impact, which I think is a powerful, powerful statement. Let me go where I think I am most needed and when I can have the most impact, where some people would just be looking for that big jump in their careers, you know, after, like I said, 37 years having your own law firm, you think, oh, okay, Supreme Court justice or whatever the case might be. What? Let me just ask you, we have about 3.5 minutes left in this particular time. What does it take to be a judge? What happens? What steps are necessary to get on the bench in that black robe?
Well, the reality is that you have to be a lawyer. And depending upon the jurisdiction and the nature of the type of judge, typically it's a person that has had 5 years of some type of legal experience.
Okay.
So, and that legal experience could be a variety of experience, whether you're in private practice, you're a prosecutor, you're a public defender, or you're a corporate lawyer or a law professor. There is no particular requirement as to the nature of your prior practice before applying to be a judge. Now, in Denver, for the Denver County Court, there is a nominating commission of 7 people that will nominate 3 names to go to the mayor, and the mayor makes the final decision as to who is a Denver County Court judge. As to all other statewide judges on the county court, district court, appellate court level, there are nominating commissions in 23 judicial districts that will select 3 names and send it to the governor. And then the governor selects the person that will be a judge, let's say, in Pueblo County or El Paso County or Weld County or Denver District Court or the appellate courts or the Supreme Court. So that is the criteria is being a lawyer, having 5 years of legal experience, and then going through the selection and nominating process with the judicial nominating commissions, and then either the mayor or the governor making the final selection.
Thank you so much for sharing that. A lot of people just don't know what the process is. Let me ask you this, and this I'm going to ask you again when we have our next interview, and this one will be on camera, but this one I want to get for this particular podcast. I'm doing a film called Stop Resisting. It's really about lack of transparency, qualified immunity, and the use of force in America by law enforcement and others. What do you think? People have said district attorneys have too much power in this country. What are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, they can break or break a case. They can bring a case to the court. They can talk about what kind of sentence should be laid down, if a police officer should be charged, if the quote-unquote victim should be charged. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, my philosophy ever since I started being a lawyer was I wanted to be an insider. I wanted to be in that room. I wanted to be the person making that decision. And so, as you know, Donnie, as we've talked about, I started off as a deputy district attorney in Denver.
Yes.
I rose to the level of a chief trial deputy in Denver. And then I went over to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I was an assistant U.S. attorney for the District of Colorado. So I was involved with being the person in the room making those decisions. And I think it's important for people of color to be in positions of power to be making the decisions that are affecting the lives of our citizenry. The case I like to talk about is the Minnesota case, the Chauvin case. Donnie, I know you're aware that the top prosecutor in that case was black.
Yes.
He was the attorney general for Minnesota. Their top in-trial prosecutor was Jerry Blackwell. He's black.
Yes.
They recruited him from private practice to be the lead prosecutor in that case. In my opinion, that made a difference in terms of the success of that case, because you had black people in positions of power making a decision on what witnesses were going to be called, interviewing those witnesses, doing the direct and cross-examination of those witnesses, and persuading certain witnesses to testify within the police and investigative field, where oftentimes that blue wall has prevented certain officers from testifying in cases against other officers. To me, and I was prideful because having been a prosecutor myself, I know that it's important to be making those decisions, whether it's a decision to prosecute someone, a decision to determine that there is not sufficient evidence to prosecute someone, to be a judge who's making the decision, if it's a criminal case, is the person going to get probation or does the person go to jail? Or if it's a civil case or a divorce case, how child support is going to be divided up between a husband and wife, or alimony. Because we have black people, I don't like to just talk about the criminal area, Donnie, because we have black people that go into divorce courts. We have black people that go into probate courts when they've died and property is to be distributed. We have black people going into civil court on personal injury cases. I think in each of those circumstances, there would be a higher level of trust and confidence if there were people of color that are the deciding officials, the judges. So that's where I come back in terms of my philosophy of being a decision maker, my philosophy of being a person that is an insider. So I've been an insider for 51 years. And I include having my own law firm for 37 years as being an insider. In other words, I was deciding who was going to be the lawyer in my law firm. I wasn't the employee of someone else. So that's my philosophy, Donnie, and in terms of being an insider and a person that is making the decisions, which, as you stated, I was one of the attorneys, one of the trial attorneys that acquired the property to build Coors Field. So where the Rockies are playing, was intimately involved in acquiring that property to build Coors Field. And that's a public stadium where people of all color can come to recreate and enjoy baseball. And so that's a source of pride for me, being an insider in that public effort.
I think that you've laid it out so eloquently about having a seat at the table. And as people always say, and it's old adage, but it's an adage that's always correct. You know, if we have a seat at the table, we can help make those hard decisions and sometimes those right decisions that will impact lives, not only now in the present when you're in that courtroom, but forever. In some cases, impact a person's life as they go into the future, or if they have a future, it can go either way. So I appreciate you sharing that that information, how you came about that decision, how you wanted to live your life. You wanted to be an insider. I think that's fantastic. We so appreciate that. Gary, for this session, we're going to end it there because I think that's a great place to end it, about how your philosophy is of being an insider. We've talked about how your philosophy is, how you hope to impact those next generation of young legal minds to have an impact on these, as we talk about lives as they go into the future. I hope that you will join us again, not only here, but like I said, in a sit-down, face-to-face video interview as well, too.
Donnie, I'd be pleased to. You and I have known each other for 30-plus years.
Yes.
And, I couldn't be more happy. We've done everything from this interview to putting on performances up in Lincoln Hills, which
yes.
is important historically for Black people and for our various communities, the importance of what happened in Lincoln Hills. So exactly. I'll look forward to talking about that sometime.
Absolutely. That'll be our next conversation. We'll start with that, you know, and I definitely want to talk about, you know, your beautiful marriage to Regina for so many years and that relationship. We talked about how those bonds between individuals and a great team, I think you guys are. So we'll talk about that next time as well.
Okay. Sounds good, Donnie.
All right.
Thank you much.
Thank you so much. I'll be in touch.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Eclectic. The Eclectic is produced by Donnie O. Betts and No Credits Production, LLC. The series is remixed by Maury Smith, a.k.a. Reese. Please subscribe to our podcasts at Spotify, Radio Public, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook at NoCreditsProductionLLC.com, Instagram, on Twitter at Donnie Betts, or The Eclectic, the podcast. I'm your host and producer, Donnie L. Betts.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.